Ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege today to welcome to the Solieri Report a woman who's quite remarkable. And I know she's remarkable, even though we've never met in person, because I have so many remarkable subscribers in Texas and in Austin, Texas, who insisted that we get her on. I've never gotten so many wonderful recommendations from our subscribers in the Austin area who are really terrific. Anyway, her name is Dr. Laura Presley. She has a PhD in chemistry from the University of Texas. She had a very successful career as an engineer. She holds 4 patents in her name, but also in management in the semiconductor engineering arena, but in management and then as an entrepreneur and small business owner. She got very active in her community with a number of great successes and projects, and then decided in 2014 to run for city council, and that's when the fun began. And she did not win, and she did not prevail in the election, but looking at the ballots and the voting systems, there was a lot of funny business going on, and I'll let her tell the rest. So, Dr. Laura Presley, thank you so much for joining us on the Solieri Report.
Oh, Catherine, just thank you so much, and bless you for having me on and discussing this really, you know, this is an emotional topic, you know, election integrity. And, you know, I've been an activist on a lot of topics over my career. I'm 55 years old. And this issue has been the easiest one to present to people because everybody wants honest elections. Everybody does, except those that are corrupting it, which are few and far between. But, you know, everybody wants honest elections, no matter what party you subscribe to. If you're an independent, if you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green Party, it doesn't matter. So this is a wonderful topic, and everybody is very passionate about it.
Right. It's funny. You're right. Everybody in America, no matter how divided they are, really wants a fair fight.
Yeah. You know, they just want to block walk or give money to their candidate or phone bank because they know they're the best. They know their candidate's the best, and let the chips fall. But that's not what's going on these days.
Yeah. So let's go back and talk about your election. You had a successful campaign. From what I hear from my subscribers, everyone expected you to win, and then you didn't. So pick us up from what happened right at the election and what happened next.
Absolutely. You know, we thought we were winning, too. You know, we had done polls. We had an incredibly professional campaign. We had blog walkers, phone bankers. We did, I don't know, 6 or 7 mailers to all our voters. And, you know, it was just top notch. And, you know, interesting, I was running against a guy who had just moved to Austin. He was 24 years old. You know, I'm in my 50s, and I've been, gosh, in Austin over almost 30 years. And, you know, I live in an economically challenged district. It's the northeast part of Austin, Texas, and we have the highest crime in the city. So we're, you know, a lot of poor people, and I've been poor, Catherine, and, you know, throughout my life, and kind of raised myself, you know, self up for my bootstraps with education, and got, you know, a technical degree, and worked really hard to, you know, improve my, you know, my career and all of this, and entrepreneur. But this kid, 24 years old, the Democrats moved him into my district 2 weeks before the deadline that anybody could run in the city council race. And that kind of raised flags, first of all. So as we're going through the campaign, you know, it looks really good. We're, you know, awesome. Our campaign's doing fabulous. Polls are looking great. We find out that this kid, I'm going to call him a kid, was an atheist. And so in my district, it's a high Hispanic area, and we have a lot of Catholics. There's a lot of churches in our area. We had 50 churches in 28 square miles. So we thought this was a really good idea, was to expose this kid as being, you know, an atheist in this district, and there's no way he's going to win. So from a campaign standpoint, we chose to discuss that and expose that. And there's no way this district was going to elect an atheist. Absolutely no way. And so when the results came in on election night, I mean, other than all the other positive things about my career and you know, representing the community for so many years and being well known in the area, you know, we get the results on election night, and oh my gosh, he has somehow beat me 2-1.
What?
I know it. It was shocking. I mean, we have a high African American population in my area, and I was at the polls, you know, oh gosh, you know, I was electioneering on election day, and I had tons of African American voters come and say, Dr. Presley, I'm voting because I don't want an atheist on that city council. He does not represent me, and we believe in God in this district. You know, we have 50 churches, so he's not representative of the population. And so
now, when you said he moved in, did he move in from out of state or from in state?
He moved in. Well, he had been in Austin 2 years, and he lived in a different district, and they had moved him into my district 2 weeks before the deadline of anybody.
Okay.
You could run in a race. So, you know, you've got residency requirements, and you know, state law requires certain residency to run in areas, you know, even in the city municipal race. So, you know, it was shocking. And what was also interesting, on election day, he was nowhere to be found. He was not electioneering at any location. They didn't even have signs up at the polling locations, his campaign didn't. So I was a little concerned, like, he seems to appear that he's got this in the bag without any effort, you know. And I'm going to tell you, that's a fingerprint, I believe, in my personal opinion, that, you know, if you've got a candidate who's not electioneering and not putting in effort on election day, something's going on behind the scenes there. So,
right.
So we get the election results. There's absolutely no way this kid's beat me 2-1. I know that. So I get up the next morning, and I start analyzing some data. Because, you know, I'm a technical person. I know how to use Excel. I can run an Excel spreadsheet and do a statistical analysis. So I started looking at the data. I looked at voters in early voting who had reported, the county had reported people voting, all the names of early voters, and I kind of did a check and balance of the precincts that reported voters and the voters' names versus the ballots that were supposedly cast that the county was reporting. And my gosh, Catherine, almost every precinct, we had 18 precincts in my district in this race, almost every precinct was off. Okay? Only one was not, and that only had one or two voters in it. So any precinct that had more than two voters, the numbers did not match. And so that is a fingerprint of a hack. When, you know, one or two precincts might be off because some election judges, you know, weren't paying attention or something. But when you have 17 of 18 precincts not matching up with the number of names that were on the voter list and the number of ballots that are reported as being cast, there's an issue. So that was the first thing that got me really paying attention to it. Felt like something really was wrong. And then I did another very detailed statistical analysis, and I found these mathematical patterns. You know, I'd been in a general election with he and six other candidates, and then we had a runoff, and it was he and I in the runoff. And what was shocking was, and I've got this on our website, presleyforaustin.com, we've got the statistical analysis showing that relative to he and I, there were precincts that stayed exactly the same number from the general election to the runoff. And we did a linear regression and showed there was an R squared of 0.98 correlation, which is not what you would expect. And I know it's hard to explain kind of on the phone without seeing a visual, but suffice it to say, the statistics showed there was a mathematical pattern between the two elections, the general and the runoff. And that is not what you would expect. And I did a comparison of other candidates that were also in runoffs in Austin, and nobody had the pattern that I had. So it looked suspicious. And, you know, most candidates don't have a technical background, or most candidates wouldn't even consider to do this type of analysis. But I knew what I was looking at. I knew what the pattern said. You know, I was an engineer for 17 years in the semiconductor industry, and I would shut a billion-dollar factory down with data less correlated than what I was looking at for my election. So I knew from an engineering and engineering manager standpoint what I was looking at, and it didn't make sense. Basically, it looks like there was a program that was loaded, and that whoever the hacker was, looks like they were kind of lazy, and they used the same exact program instead of mixing it up, you know, and throwing in a couple of random numbers instead of making it look just exactly linear as we were plotting it. So, you know, I knew there was something wrong. So I called. I sat down. You know, I can read English, and the laws are in this state in Texas are written for everybody so that they can read it and understand it. So I sat down and I read the election code in Texas, and it's about 200 chapters. And I started at the beginning, and I started taking notes of what are the backup records that have to be there for electronic voting. And, you know, and I kind of want to back up. So the system that we used here in our election in Austin, and it's called Travis County, is the Hart InterCivic eSlate electronic voting system. So we did not have a paper backup at all.
That's not legal then.
It's not. Well, it is legal here in Texas. It is. And, you know, we're dealing with that. You know, I'm working with the legislature on these issues already. But, you know, but there have to be other backup records other than a paper ballot in Texas.
Right.
And so I read the election code and I sat down and wrote down, okay, here's this chapter. This statute says you have to have this record. Okay, here's another one that says you have to have this record, A, B, C, D, whatever records have to be there. And so I started asking questions about where are these records. So we did a recount. We did a what's called a manual recount of what's called ballot images. The equipment is supposed to retain what's called an image of the ballot that the voter cast in an electronic format. Come to find out, Travis County did not have those images of the ballots. And so when we did our recount, interestingly, the paper absentee ballots, which in Texas you can always cast an absentee ballot if you're over 65 or you're not going to be in the county when election day is, and so you cast a paper ballot. And not everybody can do that. There are certain criteria. And there were about 500 of those. And when we recounted those paper ballots, it was an exact tie, not 2-1. Okay, well,
wow.
That was pretty compelling. Like, oh, this is looking good, you know, so let's do the electronic ballot images. Well,
right.
That's where the 2-1 came into play. And early voting and election day were 33.5% and 33.8%. So 0.3% difference between early vote and election day, electronic, completely different than the paper ballot. So that was another flag that went up. You know, the electronic looks like it was programmed to 33%. So anyway, we did the recount, and they could not produce what they're supposed to have legally for a recount. I raised a flag and said, you don't have a real ballot. All you're doing is printing out from a Excel spreadsheet what you're saying the voters voted. It's called a cast vote record. It's not a ballot. And I'm like, where did this come from? And then they would not let me monitor where they pulled the data. I requested that. So it was just a lot of different, what I would call, irregularities and illegalities in this recount. And so then we filed a lawsuit. We said, nope, this is not legal. We're not putting up with it. We're not going to be a victim in this. The law empowers, you know, candidates to file an election contest when there's issues, and there are issues here. There's a ton. And so we filed the lawsuit. And come to find out, this is the first lawsuit in the state of Texas for, you know, it's called an election contest. In state law, you have to sue your opponent. And you know, when you run for office, you know, it's kind of like wearing your big girl pants. You know,
right?
It's serious. You could be sued. There's all kinds of issues that could happen. You know, the county can do things wrong, and you as a candidate are accountable to make sure that things are done right. And so we filed this lawsuit, and we got discovery.
Now, so when you file this lawsuit, are you filing against the candidate who won, or against the election board, or both?
No, just the candidate that won. In state law, in Texas,
okay.
That's what you have to do. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then what's interesting was the Democrat Party came out in droves to support this kid. So, you know, our county is controlled by Democrats. The county judge and the election division, county clerk are all Democrats. And, you know, they're elected positions and they're all Democrats. So, you know, basically, I mean, and our opponent was quoted saying, you know, it's not my job You know, he was saying, you know, it's not my job to protect the voting system of this county. So y'all better come out and you better start paying for this lawsuit. And so they did. Democrats came out, and he had lawyers that were donating their legal time for him. And, you know, and myself, I'm, you know, having to hire lawyers to go, election lawyers to go deal with this. So, you know, we, as the case progressed in the trial court, we had discovery. And what we got, Catherine, was shocking. We were the first candidate in the country to ever get what's called an audit log of the main tabulation computer of the Hart InterCivic voting system. No one in the country has ever gotten this before. And, you know, I've worked with Bev Harris on these issues and John Brakey, who are also, you know, very prominent election integrity activists, have been, you know, for decades. And no one had ever gotten an audit log because a candidate is the only one that has standing to go file these suits and get this discovery.
I think this is if you look at how many elections have clearly been rigged, I think it's remarkable that that's the case.
Yes, and no one ever gotten that. No one ever had gotten this. And I think it's, you know, this is a perfect storm, quite honestly. Just having the technical background and being able to read the technical documents and understand, you know, what for this electronic voting, what has to be there. You know, it's like secondhand to me. I've managed engineers who, I'll tell you what, I've managed engineers who can hack these systems with their hands tied behind their back. This
right.
is Windows 2000 software. No joke. Windows 2000 software. And so anyway, we got discovery. We wanted, you know, this document, that document. And so we got these audit logs. And what we found was shocking. These memory cards, you know, when you're at the polling location and you cast your vote on these electronic voting machines, the vote goes on to a memory card. And these memory cards are old. They go back to, you know, like I said, it's Windows 2000 version software. So these are 2000 memory cards. They're about the size of they're about the size of a business card, okay? They're not even a thumb drive. They haven't even upgraded since then. So these memory cards are being put into this main tabulation computer where all these memory cards merge from all the precincts. They all merge to one computer. So, Catherine, if you want to hack a system, you don't have to beat the precincts.
Right.
All you have to do is beat that main computer where no one's watching.
Right.
Okay, it's simple. This is shocking how this could happen. So what we found in the audit logs that are supposed to document every activity on that computer, lo and behold, there were corruption errors with these memory cards. The computer, the tabulation computer, didn't recognize the cards. Where's this card from? Whoop, corruption error, and there it is in the audit log 9 times on election night. Corruption error on these memory cards. It's like saying, I don't know where these cards are from. I don't know where this card's from. It's not from a precinct. It's not doing the encryption handshake. So, oh my gosh, when we saw this, we were just like, are you kidding me? It's this obvious? So we're, you know, looking at these audit logs, and even on the audit logs, it shows the memory card that was corrupted. The very first one, and think about this, if you want to hack a system, you want to be the first card in, right? So you can set it up, set the program, the 2-to-1 program up, right, for everything else coming in afterwards. And guess what? The first card was corrupted. And then we got the ID of that first card. It was number 603. And then we got the audit log of where that card was being programmed in the county. So we got that audit log, first time anybody's ever gotten that. And guess what? That memory card was missing for 19 days from the county office.
Oh my God!
Yes, so it had been loaded on this programming computer. It was logged in, and then interestingly, the next line after that login was a log out. It was 10 days later. It was logged out. Where was that card for 10 days? And then again, it's put in, and then it's logged out 9 days later. Where was that card for 9 days? So 19 days. There's a security breach of that memory card that was corrupted, the first card in to my election. So looks pretty good, doesn't it? You know, well, it looks like we've identified there's an issue. At minimum, there's evidence of a security breach. We have audit logs that show corruption errors. We have audit logs that show cards are missing. We have mismatch of votes. We have statistical analysis. We have you know, there were tapes that were supposed to be printed at the precincts to document the results of the election. The county told the judges not to print the tapes. Those are the other backup records that are supposed to be there. Oh, my gosh, this is just like, you know, big, you know, circus. So we go, we're feeling really good. We've got all this documented in our lawsuit. Our opponent files a what's called a no evidence summary judgment to say Dr. Presley has no evidence of her case and we want the case thrown out of court. So the judge would not allow us to get to that memory card number 603. We had a expert, a PhD in computer technology, who was ready to analyze that card and find out why was it corrupted? What caused it to be corrupted? Was there a program on the card? The judge would not let us get to that card. Then he threw us out of court with a no-evidence summary judgment and said we had a frivolous lawsuit.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. It's shocking.
No, not to me. I've litigated with the federal government. I've seen just as bad, if not worse.
Yes. And so, you know, it's kind of par for the course, you know, when you're...
I just have to stop you now, Laura, and tell you my favorite quote. We had a judge who was the former general counsel of the CIA, and in fact, he got into trouble because he was turning in what he knew was false affidavits when he was the general counsel of the CIA. But anyway, we went in for a ruling, and we not only had the law, but we had a Supreme Court case in the last few months on point to our issue. And he ruled against us, and my attorney finally couldn't take it anymore. And he said, but Your Honor, you have to do this. It's the law. And the judge said, Mr. McManus, I disagree with the law. If you have a problem with that, take it up with Congress.
Yeah.
I understand completely. I mean, I think what I want everybody listening this to understand is that absolutely what Dr. Presley is saying, it happens. And it's shocking because when you have a wealth of evidence to throw you out on summary judgment with no evidence means, you know, I'm going to get rid of you before you can put your evidence on the record.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing, though, I am really grateful for, Catherine, is that he allowed discovery.
Right.
So, and you know, when we responded to the no evidence summary judgment, we had to file a brief on that.
Oh, so you did get it on the record?
We did.
Fabulous.
We did. So in our response to the no evidence summary judgment, we got to put all this in. So I'll tell you one thing. We were, you know, just it's a blessing to, though this case has been very challenging and very stressful, you know, financially and emotionally and spiritually, I am really grateful that that judge allowed us to get discovery. We got one round of discovery, and boy, he had to cut it off. We had, you know, I think they were thinking...
They were shy. They didn't expect it to be that bad.
There's no way she's going to prove any of this, right? Oh, no, we better shut it down.
Well, here's the thing, and I just want to point this out. If something's going to be part of an appeal... You know, whether it's the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, you've got to get it on the record in the first round.
Yes.
And that's why what we're talking about is so important. Yeah.
Yes. And we did. And our lawyers, you know, I'm grateful for what they did. And, you know, so we filed all these responses. You know, we disagreed with the judge and he, you know, granted the no evidence summary judgment. And then on top of it, they sanctioned us over $100,000, me and my lawyer, for a frivolous lawsuit. Which is just like, oh my gosh, you know. And there was a deal on the table that if we would not appeal our case to the Third Court of Appeals,
they'd make it go away, right?
They'd make it go away. And so, you know, when you're sitting there, and you're just you've spent all your money, and you're thinking of $100,000 in sanctions, you're going, that kind of sounds pretty good. but no, I said no. We're going. Someone has got to deal with this and make this go forward. We have a fabulous case. I know what I have. I know the technical stuff is real, and I'm not going to be swayed. And it kind of brings me to tears, Catherine, because at the time it was a very, very hard decision.
Yeah.
You know, looking back, it doesn't, you know, I don't, you know, I know we did the right thing, but at the time it is very compelling. And it's very threatening, you know, what they did. And I just did a lot of prayer, and I did a lot of soul searching, and what came to me was just keep moving. And, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm a Christian, and I believe right now that, you know, that this is my prayer. I say, you know, dear Lord, just keep opening the doors, and I'll keep walking through them.
Right.
And that's what's happened. And the doors just keep opening, and we just keep walking. So, you know, we filed the appeal with the Third Court of Appeals, and, you know, there's a lot of claims in our, there, you know, there are a lot of issues, you know, that happened in our election. And what we have to do from a, and you know this yourself, from a legal standpoint, you have to be very strategic about what the big hitter issues are. And we have focused on those. We have focused that in the recount. They did not use a real ballot. They did not follow the state constitution of Texas requires that ballots be numbered.
Right.
Well, and it goes back to the 1800s that ballots have to be numbered. And why is that? Because, you know, just in case there's extra, you know, or
right.
or you've got some missing or you've got duplicates.
Right.
Well, you know, back in the 1800s, they were brilliant. You know, you, and computers are good at numbering stuff, Catherine. They're good at
right.
that. That's one thing they
right.
do well. So these ballots should have been numbered, and they weren't. And that's what allows them to, you know, not have the real ballot. Who knows what
right.
they ended up producing and counting. They never would let me see where it came from, and that's another violation of state law. So we focused on the big hitters, like the constitutional requirement for a ballot and for it to be numbered. And also, we've got issues here in the Secretary of State's office. And this seems to be a consistent issue around the country, and this is where it applies to everybody. In Texas, the Secretary of State was interpreting certain laws and that they could waive certain mandatory laws. Well, we disagree with that. A law is a law is a law.
Right.
And a bureaucrat who's, you know, some bureaucrat in a Secretary of State's elections office cannot tell a county, you can ignore law. Well,
right.
we had our, you know, it was really a fabulous hearing. It was a sanctions hearing. And my lawyer is just awesome. He had the county clerk on the witness stand, and he asked her, why didn't you follow law in this recount and in, you know, in these tapes? You didn't print these tapes. And she said, well, that's not the final law. And he's like, what? He's a lawyer, right? So he's like, what's the final law? And she says, well, we get, you know, different directives from the Secretary of State's office. And he says, you think the Secretary of State can tell you not to follow law? She says, I know they can. I know. It was a gift from heaven, okay? So she's up there, and she's just adamant. Yeah, he can tell me I don't have to follow law. I'm, you know, it's kind of like the Nuremberg trials. They told me to do it,
uh-huh.
so it's okay. Well, it's not. And so that has been just kind of the golden ring in our case. That
right.
the county clerk and other clerks in the state believe that this bureaucrat can tell them not to follow law, and that's not accurate. So we have raised that issue to the court, and also we've raised the issue of the sanctions. You know, we have evidence. The ballots weren't numbered. There's corruption errors. There's no tapes. The law wasn't followed, blah, blah, blah.
Now, you got a decision in the Court of Appeals.
We did. So the Court of Appeals upheld every single thing the trial court did, even the sanctions, and sanctioned us more, okay? So if, you know, if we went to the appeals court, so they sanctioned us for going to not only the trial stuff, but also sanctioned us for the appeals court, and then kind of threatened us, if you appeal this to the Supreme Court, Texas Supreme Court, we're going to sanction you some more if you lose. I'm sorry. I think, you know, having a redress of my grievances through the court system is my constitutional right.
Right.
So this is, you know, this is over the top. So we were at that point, we were not being bullied. We're just like, we're moving forward. And, you know, our case right now is about $300,000. And that's low compared to most cases.
That's very, very low.
I know. We're very, very frugal. And, you know, typically it's $1 million to go to the Texas Supreme Court to go through all these
right.
briefs and everything with all these lawyers. And so, you know, I've been around the state of Texas raising money for this case. And like I said, everybody wants honest elections, Catherine. Everybody, whether you're Democrat, Green Party, Republican, Independent, whatever, Joe Blow on the street, They want honest elections. And so I've been around the state giving presentations on this case and educating counties on what they can do, educating voters in many counties around the state, what they can do and what the laws are, what their rights are. We didn't know what was going on, that there were corruption errors on these main computers. What we've seen across Texas now, these corruption errors are occurring in all kinds of counties around the state,
so,
not just Laura Presley's race.
So let me explain something or give you some background, because I want to talk about money for a second, just take a detour into the money. If you look, the most powerful financial position in the world right now is to control the federal credit. So the federal government can print money out of thin air and trade it for real things. And it's an enormous wealth-creating machine, whether you control the Treasury or the Federal Reserve. You know, so there's a fiscal side to the coin and there's a monetary side. But the reality is that power is controlled by 3,100 counties one at a time.
That's
if you're going to control and implement the federal credit, you have to control 3,100 counties. And what's interesting is if you look at how the money works in 3,100 counties, what you will discover is that there is a negative return on investment to taxpayers. In other words, taxpayers' money is not being optimized. And the reason is you have people who are controlling the system from behind the scenes and instead engineering that money and that federal credit to be used in a variety of ways, which is not what the people want.
Right.
So you've engineered a mechanical system, even though the people, if you look at survey after survey of what the American people want, you know, the Congress doesn't follow what they want, and the budgets certainly don't follow what they want, because it's delivering this extraordinary amounts of money and credit to insiders in defiance of the popular will. And it can only occur, you need certain conditions precedent to that negative return on investment occurring, and one of them is you need to be able to manipulate the voting systems.
You got it. And this is how it's being done. You got it.
Right. Right. Well,
absolutely.
All the money on the planet depends. You know, so if you're the insiders and you're centralizing control of all the money and using it for whatever you want in a way which defies the taxpayers' wishes, you've got to have the ability to control elections. You've got to destroy election integrity, which is why what you're doing is right at the heart. You know, you're basically having a fight with all the money on the planet.
Well, I didn't realize that. But I see your point. I do.
Right.
And, you know, Catherine, this is, you know, this is just, we have seen, you know, I can speak for Texas, and I've worked with other people in other states, but for Texas, we have the laws to make sure our elections are honest.
Right. You have very good laws in Texas.
We do. We have the best
integrity.
In the country.
You really do. You
okay?
really do. Well, Maine is pretty good. Maine is pretty good.
Maine is pretty good. We've got a Secretary of State who's telling county clerks who administer the elections, you don't have to follow it. Okay?
Yeah, that's not okay.
So that's the issue. That if you really boil it all down, you know, we have what we need, but we're not following it. So, and it's not just happening in Laura Presley's race or Travis County. We're seeing these corruption errors. God bless those software engineers at Hart InterCivic, okay, who didn't know what they were doing, I guess, to show those error codes. So they're occurring in a lot of counties around the state. And we've
seen Bev Harris, whose website is Black Box Voting, has done an incredible job of bringing up voting fraud all over the country. So we're talking about local elections, we're talking about state elections, and we're talking about federal elections. It's a serious problem, and it's getting much worse. You know, the more we get into digital systems, the reality is the digital systems don't have integrity.
They don't. They don't.
They don't.
And you know, I don't know who's hacking it. That's not, I don't have evidence of who. All I know is there's corruption errors, which I can prove, and memory cards were logged in and logged out inappropriately, and the numbers don't match, and we've got statistical patterns that don't make sense, and we need to follow law.
So now you've gone to the Supreme Court. You filed your petition. You filed your brief. Tell us where you are in the Supreme Court.
Yes. So in the Texas Supreme Court, we have, we filed our petition for review, and the court, it only takes like one justice. There's nine justices. It only takes like one to say, well, we want the opponent to respond. And so they did that. So our opponent had to respond, and we did a reply brief on top of that after he responded. And then they look at that information, and then they decide to request brief on the merits. And so at least four justices out of the nine, could have been more, said, we want to move forward. We want this case to move forward. We want brief on the merits. So we just filed our brief on the merits, and it was massively extensive. It was over 15, it was right at a little bit less than 15,000 words, over 500 pages, 160 footnotes. And I'm doing it pro se, so which means it's under my name. I have a lawyer who's helping me in the background with some, legal, expertise and case law research. But I'm putting the briefs together myself. She's reviewing them, and it's under my name. So, that's where we are right now. So our opponent is doing he's replying to that brief on the merits, and then we will have another brief, a third, I think it's actually, it'll be our fourth brief to the court that'll be due probably in May, end of April, around the May time frame. So that's where we are. And our three issues that we've raised are really, we've really narrowed them down to very specific, crucial, the most important topics. One is ballots and recounts in Texas have to be numbered according to the state constitution. A secretary of state cannot waive the state constitutional requirement. That's number one. Number two, can the secretary of state waive mandatory election law across Texas? And that's the main question. We want the court to weigh in on, are these laws just something that a bureaucrat can tell a county, don't worry, you don't have to do it. All right, that's absurd, isn't it? That's the second issue. Then the third issue we've raised is, are these sanctions appropriate? And what's interesting is, in the history of the state of Texas, over 150 years, there's never been one candidate that's been sanctioned for an election contest ever in the state of Texas. I'm the first.
How many election contests have there been?
There have been many. As I was writing the brief to the Supreme Court, Catherine, I read every single election contest back to the 1800s, and not one was ever sanctioned, ever, even to this day, until this case. And I'll tell you what is really fascinating, going through all these election contests back to the 1800s, you go through Prohibition. There were so many, fraudulent elections during the Prohibition time frame when they repealed Prohibition and counties were voting to go wet or dry or whatever, and there's all kinds of shenanigans that went on all the way through, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, all the way through now. And I've read every election contest that ever occurred in the state of Texas from an appeals court standpoint, or a Texas Supreme Court standpoint. And our case, so many of the issues we've raised in this case, the ballot numbering has been decided in the past by the Supreme Court, and even the tapes being printed are mandatory. The Supreme Court has ruled on that in the past. And so we're just asking the court to uphold what their predecessors have already told the state of Texas.
Just based on the description of the Texas law on your website, and I have to compliment you on your website because it's very good in terms of making all the information
accessible. It's very technical.
For something like this, it needs to be.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. But I don't see how the Supreme Court doesn't not rule in your favor. I mean, if they don't rule in your favor, what they're saying is there is no law. Law's irrelevant.
I know. This has just been a miracle case, Catherine. Before, it's a challenge, but I believe that it's a perfect storm, and it's time, given all the issues with electronic voting and all the hacking that, you know, we've, you know. And here's what's interesting. You don't need the Russians, Catherine. All you need is a memory card down at the county office when no one's looking, putting it in the computer, and it's corrupted, and it downloads the program.
Well, you know, I think that's why we have this big Russian canard, because people are scared to death that we're going to start looking at the what's going on with the electronic computer voting.
You don't need the Russians. You just need someone with a memory card and putting it in. So, you know, so that's kind of where our case is. I feel really, really good about it. I just, you know, walking through the case law. You know, this is the miracle about our case. The case law exists for these issues. They've already been decided. And it's just applying it to this new system, okay, the electronic voting system. We even had a case, this is what's interesting, we even had a case in 2011 at the Supreme Court of Texas, and the court was told by the Secretary of State's office, oh, yeah, that electronic voting system, it numbers ballots. But they never had the evidence whether it did or not. And so what we found in our evidence, in the discovery that we got, well, the Eastlake voting system, the electronic voting system that Travis County uses here in Texas and over 100 counties in Texas use, it can number early voting ballots and provisional ballots. It cannot number election day ballots. So it's situationally constitutional.
Someone
did not provide the Supreme Court in 2011 completely accurate information.
Right.
So, you know, that's not the best thing.
Well, it's remarkable that they would design the software to be non-compliant from the get-go. That's quite remarkable. Because it's not, the law is simple. It's clear.
It is simple. It's very simple. And it's been there for, you know, since the 1800s. So it's been there. Yeah, so we feel really, really good about it. You know, it's just been an expensive endeavor. And, you know, and just God bless all our donors.
Let's talk then. Before I want to talk about how we support you, but I do want to compliment you on representing yourself pro se. If I had to go through litigation again, that's what I would do. And there are many different reasons for it. One, of course, is you have a mastery of the technical information, and it's, you know, it's easier for the technical person to learn the law than it is for the attorney to learn the technical information.
I think so. I have found it to be true. Yeah. I really have.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with
it
that.
Really is. Yeah. So that's smart. But also, if you look at a lot of the shenanigans that go on, there's a lot of pressure they can bring to bear and threats they can make to an attorney, and they can do it behind your back. Whereas if you're pro se, there is no behind your back. It's only you.
That's right.
So, yeah, so it really protects you from a lot of shenanigans, and it means you can do something. I mean, you're doing this highly economically, and it's because you're doing the work and you're doing a fantastic job. One of the things I always recommend to people who are doing this kind of litigation is, you know, the thing that saved my life is we put it all up on the web. And you've done a remarkable job of getting all the information up and accessible. And that means a lot of the shenanigans that would usually go on in this situation can't go on.
Interesting. Well, you know, I didn't think about that.
Right.
You know, I'm an engineer at heart, and you just show everything. And
right.
You're just transparent, and yeah, so, but I'm
well, it makes it much easier. Yeah, it makes it so much easier for people in the independent media to cover the story because they can see it, they can get it. They don't, you know, you don't have to ship them three boxes of documents. It's all up there on the web. Okay, so let's turn to you. How do we support you? We can, at your website, we can donate, correct?
Yes, and you know, we're raising money for the last brief, which is, it's probably going to be about $10,000. This brief on the merits we did it cost us $20,000. And I'm going to tell you some inside baseball. My lawyer and I went back and forth, and we were on version 50.50. You know, I mean, it was just, there's so much work involved in this, and she's got to have access and time to put into it and do the case law research and the strategy and all of it. So she's been a partner in this thing. So we're trying to raise probably $10,000 for this last brief. It's the fourth one.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, people can donate online, you know, at PresleyForAustin.com. You know, you can mail us a check. Our my address is up on our website, and I can give the address out.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so the website address is Pressley, PresselyFourAustin.com.
Mm-hmm.
My mailing address is Laura Pressley. It's LauraPressley, Legal Fund, and my address is 10203 Wood Glen, WOODGLEN, Cove, at Austin, Texas, 78753.
And they make the checks out to Laura Pressley Legal Fund?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and we report donations, and state of Texas requires address and address for anybody that donates over $50, and anybody that donates $500 or more, we have to have your occupation and your employer.
Okay.
That's required for the finance forms. So,
okay.
Yeah, we're trying to raise $10,000 for this, and you know, we have all kinds of donors. We have donors that give us $5. We have donors that give us $1,000, and everything helps. And we're very frugal with our funds.
One thing I do want to say to everybody, if you can only afford $5, give $5. Because the people who give $1,000, if they hear, you know, if they hear that there's 1,000 people who gave $5 each, it matters.
I know. It's
so,
huge. It's
right.
Huge
so the $1,000 donors are much more willing to give if they see lots of $5. So,
yes.
You know, absolutely, you know.
We have thousands of donors. I mean this case has been going on for almost 3 years now, and we're not going away. You can count on me to see this through. And, you know, I believe this is going to be an impact to voting systems all across, not just Texas, but across the country. You know, all states need to have numbered ballots. You know, what Texas has really is a benchmark for
right.
election law, and the rest of the country needs to step up. I mean, Florida does not have numbered ballots, Catherine.
Right.
I mean, how can you? That's just fraud waiting to happen.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because I'll tell you what, as you as a voter, you mark your ballot, you see your number, and in a recount, you can make sure that your candidate that's going to do the recount, you look for your number. Does it have the candidate on there that you voted for? There's accountability there. That's
right.
Why the numbering is so crucial. And this is why, you know, what I try to do is encourage people, understand what your election laws are in your state and hold your elected officers accountable to it. And the only people that can file these lawsuits, Catherine, are candidates. And I've talked to Bev Harris about this over and over again. More and more candidates have to step up. And I'll tell you another thing. The money will be there. You know, I trusted. I had faith. And it kind of brings tears to my eyes. I had faith in the time when we didn't have anything. We were in debt for the lawsuit, in debt for the trial court. And I said, no, I'm not going to take that deal. And we're going to go
right.
forward. And I got in my car and went to all these counties around Texas. And we raised money for this case. We had to do the
right.
legwork, and and the legwork, what that produced was we educated so many around the state, and now they're empowered. So all of this had to happen. All of this, you know, you kind of see this step, that step, you know, one step after the other, and the money will be there. So candidates that believe that there's some shenanigans going on, I'm here to help you. I'm here to be a consultant, no charge at all, just to make sure that we have honest elections in this country. So I'm here to help.
Right. Well, you know, this is a campaign year. Every year, every 4 years, I get so frustrated because I see people spend hundreds of hours of their time focused on the presidential election, when meantime the real game is being pulled out from under them with all this shenanigans in the state and local. And what they don't understand is...
Yeah.
They're watching the entertainment show while the real deal's being stolen out from under.
That's right. And candidates
right.
have to stand up, Catherine. Candidates have to stand up. And the money will be there, okay, for
well,
the
but
truth.
For candidates to stand up, what would really help candidates stand up is to watch one do it and do it successfully. So I would say the next step is we all got to send you $5 or $1,000.
Thank you.
And we've got to tell all of our friends about you. And, you know, so I think the next step is we get this one, because I think, you know, it's hard to get nine judges. There are nine judges on the Supreme Court in Texas. It's hard to get nine judges to do a dirty together. That's hard.
And here's what I really believe in my heart. I believe that we still have some honest elections in the state of Texas. I've been to so many counties, and, you know, our statewide elections, which are, you know, we've got 254 counties, and we've got many of them still with paper ballots that are numbered. We still have honest elections in this state. I mean, Donald Trump won Texas by 800,000 votes out of almost over 9 million, okay? So it was close, and the paper ballot counties were 600,000 of that 800,000.
So, wow.
I know. I did that analysis. So, you know, we still have honest elections, and these Supreme Court justices are statewide races. And I believe they want to do the right thing. I believe they're not happy that they were not given completely accurate information on the prior case in 2011 over these systems. And so now we've you know, and cases do this, Catherine. One case builds on the next, and it's kind of, you know, we're all part of this system of truth, and we all move the truth forward incrementally as we go, and we all have responsibility to do that. And so our case is on deck now, and we're showing what the truth is, and I believe the judges, with their discernment, their God-given discernment, you know, will make the right decision, will make the truthful and honest decision that's beneficial.
You know, for many years, I've said the thing that was going to turn America around is the engineers were going to get fed up and start to get involved in politics.
Well, I'm not putting up with it. I know what the data means. I know what it looks like. This is not good. I know it.
Okay, so Laura, give your website one more time, so everybody has
Presley,
it.
Presley, P-R-E-S-S, two S's, L-E-Y, four, F-O-R, Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N, .com.
Now, do you have an email update list or something so that we can
stay
current?
Let me give you my email, too, and people can email me, and we'll put them on our distribution list. It's Laura, L-A-U-R-A, Presley, P-R-E-S-S-L-E-Y, at startmail.com, startmail.com. That's my personal email.
Okay.
You send me an email, we will put you on our distribution list, keep you updated on, you know, all the things that go on with election integrity in Texas and our case, and... exciting. It's exciting.
We just wish you all the best. You're doing this for everybody. This is, you know, this is really a national and global issue. So if democracy is going to function, the voting systems have to function. And the collapse of integrity, particularly with the digital systems, is a problem. So I can't thank you enough for what you're doing. And I really think you're doing it for everybody. And this is a campaign year. So it's time to really make this happen. So let's see if we can't get a little support going for you. Before we close, any other message you want to give to our subscribers?
No, I think you know, I do a lot of prayer, Catherine, and you know, when I pray, what comes back to me is move your feet. And so, you know, you can sit there and pray all day for fix this, fix that. But then what comes back is move your feet. And we have now the critical mass to make this change and to have a better, more honest and trustworthy election system.
So here's my prediction. My favorite Bible story, as all my subscribers know, is the story of Gideon. And Gideon and his army of 300 came down the side of the mountain, and his mandate was to throw the Midianites out of Israel, and the Midianites were so evil and suspicious that they stood up and killed each other.
Of course, can't trust each other.
So I think you know, my prediction is that this is going to be, you're going to set the Midianites against each other. And and that's why it was so important you not get all the way to the Supreme Court, but you have. So anyway, okay, so we'll say prayers to Dr. Laura Presley, thank you so much for everything you're doing. You have a wonderful day, and thank you for joining me on the Soleri Report.
Oh, bless you. Thank you for everything you do, Catherine. You're an angel on this earth. You're a brave angel. So thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.